Welcome to our new show, the What Anyone Can Do podcast with Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Our new show picks up where the last show, Year of the Peer, left off, highlighting the simple truth that who you surround yourself with matters, and that if we enlist the support of others, give back to those who give to us, and pay it forward for the next generation, we can do anything. Author and keynote speaker Leo Battari and I will interview a diverse group of thought leaders who will share stories and insights that will help you succeed in business and in life. How? By doing the things anyone can do, but most of us never will. No, it's not the NHL channel, but I guess we could be. He is Mr. Boston, Leo Battari. LeoBattari.com. That's LeoBattari.com. You can find all of our content, all of the podcasts, Leo's articles, and more over at the website. We encourage you to go. Here wearing some semblance of victory green, Tyler Seguin bobblehead in the background. My Dallas Stars play game 7 tonight. We are recording here on May the 7th, 2019. My birthday, by the way, Leo.
Ah, happy birthday there.
I'm hoping the Dallas Stars will deliver tonight. We'll see.
That's very nice. We should actually post this show later today just so that we can at least get this up before the results.
Yeah, we should.
Of the game. Might as well. Because we'd normally just post it on Thursday anyway. But, hey, let's go a little early. Yeah, last night was pretty cool, especially when, as we know, Tortorella, the Blue Jackets coach, all but guaranteed or basically did guarantee that game 7 in Boston would happen. And, you know, it's just never a good thing to bait another team like that.
No.
And pretty much say this is going to happen. Cause I think the Bruins were like, no, we're not coming back to Boston for game 7. You never want to risk game 7 at home, unless you're behind and you're forcing game 7. If you're up in the series, I don't care if you're playing at home or not. You don't go there if you don't have to. And so last night was not only, I think, a real, dominant performance, but, you're talking about, Dallas Stars goaltender, but I think Rask is just a force of nature. That dude is awesome.
Yeah, he is.
And he's hot right now. You know, he stopped 39 shots last night and,
he can carry him the whole way. That's for sure. No doubt.
Looking at the team that swept the Tampa Bay Lightning, when you consider what they did, in the regular season this year. And so they beat a good team. They beat them at home. And now it's to the Carolina Hurricanes. And, of course, for you guys, you're playing the Blues in St. Louis, game 7 tonight.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the cultural differences between, say, the Boston sports market and Dallas, especially when it comes to the Stars, because this is very much a Dallas Cowboys town. Mm-hmm. And the Dallas Stars were one of the first expansion teams to kind of come, south of the Mason-Dixon kind of a thing. But the expectation in Boston, because it's been the talk here, if a game seven in Boston is very different than a game 7 would be in Dallas, or even a game 7 in St. Louis, which is unfortunately a franchise that has had high expectations and not delivered. This morning they were talking here, they're kind of like the Minnesota Vikings of hockey. They're always good, just not quite getting there. But man, Boston, it's a whole different deal. The expectation of that city to deliver a champion is really high.
Well, just the sports culture in general, years ago. And so maybe a difference with Dallas, but most certainly a difference with St. Louis, right? So I remember I was very fortunate to have been at the Patriots' first Super Bowl win in New Orleans when they beat the then St. Louis Rams, the greatest show on turf. St. Louis was way favored in that game and all. So let me just say that being at the Super Bowl, there was no mistaking who the St. Louis fans – take the hats, jerseys off, right. Everything, right? The St. Louis fans were like just the sweetest, nicest people doing their thing. And it was a totally different element, let me just say, in terms of the Boston fans who were there, ready to do their thing and be the passionate fans that they are, over the top, you know, but pretty fun stuff. But there was a palpable difference in culture, let me just say.
Big time.
But I love, in fact, it was really interesting. I was in St. Louis, speaking there. It was 2 years ago now. And I remember, you know, I was there for just about a week. There was one night I'm looking, I said, I got to do something tonight, see what happens. So sure enough, I'm thinking, hey, I wonder if the St. Louis Blues are home tonight playing hockey. It was in January that I was there. And not only were they home, but they were playing the Bruins. And I'm like, this is the greatest thing. So like 45 minutes later, I'm running over to the arena. I'm able to pick up a ticket. And I just sat on my own and watched the Bruins and the Blues play hockey. And it was just a really fun night. And, kind of good stuff and very lucky that happened. But, you know, I do wonder, though, if the Bruins and the Dallas Stars could be on a collision course for the Stanley Cup. You never know.
For Boston, it would be expected. For the Dallas Stars, it would be, you know, man, a major cherry on top. I mean, just to make the playoffs was kind of the goal this year. You know, we've got a first-time NHL coach. He came from Denver. Yeah. You know, one of your ex-hometowns.
Well, and the Avalanche are still in it. They get their own Game 7 tomorrow.
Yeah. And, boy, we were all rooting for the Avalanche, too, because we wanted that to go to Game 7. So if Dallas does win, wouldn't have to have only, like, one day off and then play again, plus kind of wear out the opponent kind of a thing. It's been a good playoff. It's been a good playoff all the way around.
No question, you know. So last time – we not only talked about, you know, Randy's Circle and the opportunity out there for people to join Randy's Circle. So if you're interested in joining, Randy's, small business virtual group, please visit thepeeradvantage.com. But the other thing we spent a lot of time talking about was this idea of what makes peer group meetings really great and the fact that it's up to each individual member to make that possible. And so we talked about it in the podcast. I've written a piece on it since. And, you know, there's a lot of data and there's a lot of detail and things that I get into with the workshop that I think definitely adds some texture and some ability to create specific action items. But, you know, as we all try to simplify things as best we can, I was just thinking about what are the three things that if you just did these three things, it would be an immediate game changer. And we talked about the fact that if you show up, right, literally be at the meetings all the time, if you step up, if you bring your A game, and you follow up, you know, so that there's a sense not only that you're communicating your progress and what you're doing, but also it creates real learning moments and learning opportunities for everyone else. And if you do those three things, really amazing. So what makes me think about show up, and I think it would be fun to talk, you know, spend this show just talking about these, take these one at a time. And the next show we'll talk about step up and next follow up. Of course, you know, we've got Brian Solis and Rich Colgard and Jennifer Vessels from Executive Growth Alliance will also be appearing, you know, on the show soon as well. And we can get those shows done. But I think a real mix of some great outside content from those authors and some maybe deeper dive into what show up, step up, and follow up is all about, you know, would be really helpful. And it makes me think about these hockey teams, right? Or anybody in the playoffs right now. Now, I can't say the Celtics are doing quite as well, unfortunately, but the Bucks are a bit of a force of nature this year. But the but when you think about what would happen with these teams, and I would suspect that none of the teams who are in the playoffs right now, who are the top teams in their sport, no matter which sport they're in, were showing up to practice is optional, right? Like right. The idea that you can get a team to work together and gel and be at their best if people aren't actually making it to practice all the time. And yet here we talk about group meetings and we talk about team meetings, and it can't be discretionary that you show up, right? I mean, it's got to be, you know, where you're making a commitment to everyone else there that you are in and you're there to play and you're there to deliver, whether it's a group experience where you're expected to be a contributor to other people's individual you know, aspirations and challenges just as your own, you know, or if it's a team situation where you're committed to, you know, trying to attain a singular goal, right? So I just kind of don't get the mindset in some respects.
Well, it was interesting here in Dallas. So Jim Montgomery, who again came from the college ranks, he won an NCAA championship there in Denver. And he comes to Dallas. He's a first year NHL coach. He's got limited NHL experience. He played for the University of Maine in college and with Paul Kariya and was outstanding at the collegiate level, but just not quite good enough at the big show. But he comes to Dallas, and Alexander Radulov, who's a stud Russian, I mean, a dirty, nasty, gritty, the kind of player every team would love to have, and clearly one of the leaders on the team, he no-shows. He's later, he no-showed. And this was early on, and so you've got this rookie coach, and everybody was just, you know, benched him. And the guy came out, Radulov came out, and just, he owned it, fell on the sword. And there are people that you could argue that it was a pivotal time as far as team building and a team chemistry, and it made a huge difference that, okay, coach is not going to let him off the hook. Well, man alive, where does that, you know, where does that put me? You know, if I'm a third, fourth line guy, because this is a top line NHL forward in the whole league. Yeah, impressive. But that kind of responsibility to the group, to the room, a big statement was made.
Yeah, look at the whole Le'Veon Bell situation this year. Just look at a lot of themes that just can tear a team apart when you've got one player. And I think what's interesting is, sometimes I think the attitude of people in terms of showing up, right? So let's say, you know, you're going to a peer advisory group meeting, right? Well, it's not like going to a performance, right? You're not going there and just sitting in your seat and saying, all right, bring it to me, you know, show me. You're in the play. You're in the performance. You're a piece of it. You contribute to making it great. And if by the power of your example, you show up, because you're there to make it great and other people are expected to do the same, and you look one another in the eye and you make that commitment to one another, it makes all the difference in the world, right? Because it isn't about, oh, if you miss X number of meetings, we've talked a lot about this, that you're punished for it or whatever. It's like, how can the people who are part of that gathering make it a can't miss experience for everybody there? So the idea of not showing up is almost completely out of the question, because it's a can't miss experience for the value you get, but it's also, and this is what speaks to what we've talked about so often with Angela Meyer's work, that everybody matters in that conversation, right? That being there and being that person who recognizes that I'm making a unique contribution to this whole group that no one else makes, no one else can make. It's why you're there. And you have to own that, you know, a bit, and realize that when you, you know, I've told the story. I mean, I remember doing a workshop with a whole, and it was a group of CEOs actually. And I get into this whole thing about attendance and being there and how if you don't have everyone there, it's almost impossible to create any consistency and try to drive these factors that we talk about there, right? And so anyway, the CEO literally got up out of his chair and made a speech to the group about, look, I'm there when I can get there. You know, it's my loss when I'm not here, and I'm paying the money and blah, blah, blah. And it was this quite, you know, he actually did it quite eloquently, to be fair. So anyway, he sits down. And so they talk about a pivotal moment, like, what do you do with that, right? So anyway, I just, my instinct at the moment just pointed to one of the people in the room. And I said, in about a minute, I said, tell me what's lost when, for the sake of argument, we'll call him Bob, when Bob doesn't show up for a meeting. So all of a sudden he starts describing what that looks like. Then I said, how about you? And then the third person, a fourth person, Bob's now wrecked. He's listening to what everyone else feels when he's not in the meeting and the loss that results from that. And I think he was blown away. And, you know, he looks at me and he looks at everyone and he's like, I'm not going to miss any more meetings, right? But, and I also said to him, in fairness, I said, I didn't do that to pick on you. My point really is that I could have had that conversation about any other member here, and sure, you all would have delivered a very similar response in terms of what they bring to the table. I said, you cannot put together a jazz ensemble and start removing instruments and expect it to sound the same. It's just never going to happen. So I think this idea that, first of all, owning the fact that we matter, making sure that this is the kind of can't miss experience. And then also, I think a big part of it is never taking, you know, anything for granted. You know, just because you show up and all that, you can't dial it in. You have to constantly challenge yourself to get better. You know, and we've talked about this with regard to championship teams. You know, when championship teams don't make the championship the goal, but they just consider it the reward, then the goal starts to be what it takes to actually win championships. So the goal really is, how do we get better than last time? How do we be better the next meeting than we were a month ago or 2 months ago or 6 months ago, right? How do we keep raising the bar for us so that we are performing at a level of excellence that we can feel really, really good about?
Since the majority of our listeners, I would presume, simply because of the scarcity nature of kind of peer advisory, peer advantage groups, and people are probably more in the context of a team, what application can we give our viewers and our listeners if you are part of a team or you are leading a team and, okay, showing up, a meeting is booked, conference room A, 4 o'clock, everybody be there, and they're there. What subtle differences do you think are there in that showing up and stepping up? Because there can be a fine line. You can be there in body. You showed up physically, but is that really showing up?
Right. No. So I think it's all about setting the example. You know, one of the things I brought up in the article is you may not be the leader of the group, but you can be a leader in a group. For sure. So, or be a leader on a team, right? Even if you're not the team leader,
right?
You know, so to speak, by position or whatever, whoever that looks, you can lead by your actions. You can do what Jim Kouzis and Barry Posner have said so famously when they look at the five exemplary practices of leadership. It's about model the way. There's nothing more powerful than setting the example and having other people note that that's what's expected and that's what's accepted, right? Just like when you, the example you brought up of the coach with that player, how many employees, you know, when you finally decide to fire someone who's underperforming, do the other employees say, oh, I can't believe you fired them? No, what they say is, I can't believe it took you so long to do it. Because right, we are, you know, what we tolerate starts really defining that standard for everybody. And you can't on one hand tell people or ask of people, show up, bring your A game and all that, when we're willing to accept someone sometimes not showing up, and when they do, they bring their C game, you know, right, that doesn't work, you know?
No.
So that comes down to, in all likelihood, just probably you got the wrong person.
And showing up isn't just going through the motions.
No. I mean, it's showing up and being engaged. I mean, I think, you know, we'll spend even more time, you know, in the next show talking about what stepping up looks like, you know, in a group experience and how to go about really trying to extract the most amount of value you can for the time that you're together. I mean, I think that's another, you know, big component of it. But I think to do that, you know, you've got to be there. And you've got to be ready to play. I mean, I think that all in all is that big transition from show up to step up is the preparation piece. You've got to be, you got to have your head in the game. If there's things that you were supposed to have read or thought about or considered or whatever prior to being there, you don't show up and just wing it. And we all know when we've been, you know, we've all been there. We've been in situations where we haven't been as prepared, and it doesn't feel very comfortable when it's clear that everyone else in the room is. So right, we either hope that we can escape a little bit in that meeting, but I hope more that it's a reminder of next time, I'm not going to let that happen anymore. I can't be that person who shows up at this meeting and is not able to deliver to the best of my ability because I just, you know, it slipped my mind or it didn't. I mean, that's just irresponsible. It doesn't, and it's not only, you know, hurts me, but it really, you know, has a detrimental impact to everyone else in the group or the team.
What are some pitfalls or some suggestions that you could make for people, whether it's an enterprise level or whether it's even a small business and there's just a small team of people being called together, you know, for some type of a meeting to get something accomplished, hopefully. Some of the pitfalls of why people don't show up, even if they're physically, and maybe some things that leap to your mind that people could just do better, whether they're the leader or not.
I think that there's something scary for people. And this goes back to, I mean, I know I keep repeating this, but it is core to it, I think. When you look at Angela Meyer's work about mattering, you know, I think it is a very scary thing to accept responsibility for our gifts and to realize that when we show up in a room, us bringing that to the table at 100% is crucial. You know, it isn't, you can just phone it in. Isn't it, well, there's three or four other people there who will carry the day. There isn't, you know, all of that. It's recognizing, owning, and being able to deliver on the fact that when I step into a meeting, I'm there for a reason. And I'm going to make sure that that reason is apparent all the time. That doesn't mean I'm going to dominate the conversation. It doesn't mean I'm going to try to be a hero or anything like that. But I'm going to bring whatever is expected of me, and I hope then some, you know, into that situation, right? So I could be on a cross-functional work team, for example. Well, if I'm on the marketing side of things, I'm not probably going to have a whole lot to offer in terms of the finance, in terms of, you know, I will let those people who play those roles, who I trust, who are also bringing their A game in that space to do that. But then I have to be equally up to the task in the discipline where I'm expected to contribute to show how this can all fit and work together so that we can move forward together. And just taking ownership of that, again, I think it's scary, you know, for a lot of folks. It's not dissimilar from what we've talked about with Laura Goodrich's work when you ask people, what do they want? And they are easily able to say, well, what I don't want is blah, blah, blah. But to ask them to say, but what do you want? What do you want for you? Because it's scary to talk about that. And it, you know, it even comes back to, you know, Robert Fritz's work, where he talks about how there's an aspect of powerlessness and unworthiness that basically is part of, sometimes it's both. Usually it's one or the other, and it tends to be embedded somewhere in all of us. And I think the sooner we are able to shake those two things and realize, A, we are worthy, and B, our contribution matters, and there is power in that, then, you know, it's easier to complain about how things are going on at the company from the cheap seats, you know, and to talk about, oh, I can't believe they're doing this, or I'm going to complain about that or whatever. Well, again, you're not sitting in the audience here. You are part of this team, you know, and the moment you decide that you're going to step up and play and engage, that's where the rubber meets the road. And I think those are the kind of people you want, you know, in the organization for sure, or as part of any peer advisory group.
You mentioned trust, you know, trusting, if you're in marketing, trusting the finance people and people that know, what role does trust play in our ability or our inability maybe to show up, whether it's trust in ourselves or trust in teammates?
I think it's essential. When I talk to groups, for example, so one of the things that is essential to a peer advisory group is having a safe and confidential environment, defined basically as the environment being safe and that I can feel completely open to talk about things without fearing ridicule or someone making fun judgment or anything like that, that I've got an empathetic, non-judgmental, you know, ear on that. And that secondly, there's an aspect of knowing and feeling comfort in what happens in the room stays in the room. that this is where this lives and that's it. We're not talking about it outside. People aren't talking about it with their spouses or friends or anything like that. What happens in the room stays in the room, and that becomes really essential. And once people start to feel that level of trust in one another, now it opens huge doors, right? Now it impacts so much the quality of the topics that people are willing to bring up, both personal and business. So without the trust piece of it, you're never going to go deep on anything that could ever really be helpful to you, because you just don't trust, you just don't trust the environment in that way. So a lot of what I'll do in the workshops, for example, because, you know, one of the funny things about trust, which is really how this translates into the team environment, right? Is I'll basically say to them, so when I first started doing these workshops, it was kind of funny. So I probably did like the first half dozen of them, and I would ask these groups, all right, I want you to rank your safe and confidential environment on a scale of 1 to 10. And they'd all, oh, it's 9.5, it's 10, it's awesome, it's unbelievable. And so after a while, because I would continue with the workshop that day and I'm watching everyone engage one another, and I'm like, I'm not feeling any like 9.5 or 10 candor happening here at all, right? So then I started to ask, all right, rank your environment on a scale of 1 to 10. But then I want you also to give me a second ranking. I want you to rank your ability to leverage that environment. And I create a simple metaphor for them where I basically said, look, imagine that this environment I'm talking about, you're at a spa and there's this amazing pool of water there that's a little bit of steam rising off it. And you know it would be unbelievable if you immersed yourself in it, what that would feel like and how amazing it would be. Yet, you may be, happy with just sitting in the lounge chair looking at it, or maybe you'll dangle your toes in the water, but you're not going all in, if you will. So what I try to find out is, yeah, the environment's really safe, which they'll often still call it a 9.5 or 10, but then they say, how well do I use it? 6, maybe, right? So then it's like, all right, so how can we work together to make sure that you take that from a 6 to a 7 or an 8 or a 9 or whatever that looks like for you, so that you get the full benefit of this? Because until you can realize the full benefit of that, you're never going to get where you need to be with regard to both the quality and the way you're able to talk about, certain challenges or opportunities or aspirations you have or anything like that. And you're certainly not going to be able to create much of a culture of personal responsibility slash accountability, because you would never have that comfort level. You would never have that level of comfort to actually challenge someone, not because you're trying to call them out, but because you care about them and because they have expressed something they want for themselves and yet somehow can't move off the dime. And you want to be helpful in helping them do that. To get there, think about the trust that's required in order to really be able to do that and trust that conversation that it's coming from the right place. So trust is huge. I think trust is the epicenter of what makes for great groups. And also in a team situation, one of the things that I always ask in the workshops as well is I'll ask folks to name the very best team they've ever been part of in their life. Now, what's hilarious is that when I talk to some groups and the best they can do is they're talking like Little League baseball. I'm like, really? Right. Like, you haven't been on a better team since? That's rather sad. Right. But most people actually will talk about some professional experiences or their executive team or something like that, which is great. But, once they start identifying, well, what was it that made the team so great? In almost every case, there's not only the clarity of purpose, but there is the trust in one another. Right? There's the realization that we all had roles and I trusted that I didn't have to worry about his or her doing her job or filling her role.
Right.
Cause they got that and they trusted that I've got mine also. And that's how that tended to work. And that isn't all kumbaya. We've talked about it in a lot of different cultures. Sometimes it's really challenging one of being open to do that. But again, if you don't have trust, you can't challenge one another without creating distrust, without creating this idea that, well, I'm being called out because someone has an agenda or this, that, and the other. If you're part of a real team that's just trying to produce great work, then you can have those hard conversations with one another because you've got the trust there to know that it's really all about achieving a result that none of us could ever do by ourselves.
Well, you're challenging Bob, the CEO, was not confrontational. I mean, he knew it was for his benefit and the benefit of the group. I'm thinking, I know from my experience, the showing up or the dread, which is probably a worthwhile topic in showing up, the dread that we can have of even going to the meeting, of participating because we don't trust other people in the room is enormous.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if I had one challenge, not only for every member of any peer advisory group or team out there, but also for the leaders, you know, whether it's, you know, a team meeting, or I'll speak probably even more specifically to, you know, a peer group or mastermind group meeting. I think everyone should be thinking about when they go in and show up that day, how can I contribute to making this a can't miss experience? How do I go into this with the idea that when we walk out of here today, we're going to go, wow, look what we did today. And I can't wait till next month when we all get together again, or whenever, whatever period of time, you know, your meetings may go from one to the next. And you start doing that, and you're not going to have any showing up problems. You're not going to have any step up problems, and you're going to create a level of follow up and learning that I think can be more extraordinary than you can imagine. And it's all just about, it's not about someone bringing something to you and delivering it. It's about you being a player and understanding your role and the impact you'll have, right? It's peer influence. It's peer advantage. It's all of how we drive one another to be better.
Jim Montgomery here in the stars to bring this kind of full circle. And as we kind of press to the finish line of this episode. So game 7 is in St. Louis. And of course it could be coach speak, but as leaders, we get it. There's something to it. He was commenting yesterday how thankful he is that game 7 is in St. Louis and not in Dallas, because the team, they are all together. Everything is taken care of. Nobody's got to worry about how, okay, I got to ride to the arena. I got to leave at this time. You know, they are all together. And he has spent a lot of time talking about just all of that togetherness, which all of us have had some experience like that. We know what it is to be part of a great group, of a great team. And I would just hope that people listening are fueled, inspired, motivated to make whatever team or whatever group that you participate in, you know, to do your dead level best, to be one of those contributors, to fuel and feed the trust and not erode it, and not stay away just because, for whatever reason, but to try to make it better. Staying away isn't going to make it better. Not showing up surely isn't the path to success or moving forward.
Well, there's nothing more unifying in many respects than when you're a team and you're on the road and you step into an arena and everybody in there is against you, you know, so you have your choice pretty much is you either lay down or it creates a level of bond and commitment to one another that, you know what, we're going to win this game. You know,
it wasn't lost on the Dallas Stars that in game 5, when Dallas won at St. Louis, their home fans were booing them loudly, you know, which would just be unfathomable for anybody in Dallas, Texas, who's a Stars fan. Now you could see it in the Cowboys, but again, that's that culture difference. Boston, you could see them booing their team if they didn't show up to play and play.
I'm gonna close with probably one of my favorite stories from, this is a long time ago, but it was in the Boston Garden, and it was basically the year that the Philadelphia 76ers won the championship. It was in 83, I believe. And so in the Eastern Conference Finals, they were playing at the Garden, and it was apparent that the Sixers were going to win. They were going to play L.A. in the finals. Well, Boston hates Philadelphia, but they hate L.A. worse.
Right.
So at the end of the game, there's like a minute left to play, the whole Boston Garden standing up, screaming basically at the top of their lungs to the Philadelphia team, beat LA was the chant going through. It's like, if we can't go, you guys have to kick their ass because we're, and that to me was one of the most unbelievable spontaneous moments of a fan base being like, yeah, we can't have the Lakers win. That was just great fun. But, you know, kind of unspoken, and yet somehow that all of those fans is influenced one another to into the power
of the collective.
No question.
Yeah, exactly. The website is leobattari.com. That's LEOBOTTARY.com. We don't say this ever, and we probably should, but we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast. You can do it. Any of your favorite podcast catchers, there's a link over at the website, a page, subscribe to the podcast. It'll show you all the ways that you can get the content. Of course, the videos are over at YouTube. So we'd appreciate you subscribing there as well and hit that bell, that notification. And every time we upload a new show, you'll be notified. So that's all I'm going to hawk today, Leo.
Well, good. Well, hey, good luck to the Dallas Stars tonight. And if we can, if you guys can win and we can get by the Hurricanes, maybe we will actually see you in the Stanley Cup Finals, and that would be great fun. So
it would be.
With that, hope everyone has a great week. We'll get the show posted up early, and we'll take it from there. You have a great, great time. Thanks. Good luck tonight.
Thank you. To learn more about our show and what we do, to submit questions to us, and to subscribe to What Anyone Can Do podcast, please visit our website, whatanyonecando.com. What Anyone Can Do podcast is hosted by Leo Battari and me, Randy Cantrell. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod is Vibe Ace. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0 license. Thanks for watching or listening. We hope you'll share the podcast.